Toby missed it.
And if anyone ever finds that phone. Okay. Good evening. As we mentioned last week, we have a special privilege this year of having two Wednesday night Hanukkahs, giving us the opportunity to talk about Hanukkah twice. So I thought I would talk tonight, probably briefishly, a little bit about some of the questions that come out of the issue of Hadlakas near Hanukkah, specifically the fact that the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos has a debate about how exactly do we characterize the mitzvah of near Hanukkah. Do we say that it's Hadlaka osa mitzvah, that the main focus is that the lighting is the mitzvah, or do we say that Hanacha osa mitzvah, that since there is such an emphasis on where the menorah is, an emphasis that has shifted over the generations. In the time of the Gemara, it was outside the house. Nowadays, it's inside the house. But since there is such a focus on where it's placed, maybe you would say, Hanacha osa mitzvah. So the Gemara has various applications of that machlokas. For example, the Gemara says that why is it an issue? Assumes that it is an issue. Why is it an issue to light the menorah inside your house and then bring it outside? And the assumptions, Mani Gemara, they were lighting outside the house. So why is it a problem if you light it inside and bring it outside? So says the Gemara, Yamris Bishlama, it makes sense if you say Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah. Because if you say Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah, so then one of the presumptions of that would be that you'd have to light it in the place where it's meant to be. You can't light it somewhere else in a place where, let's assume, it's not qualified to be, and then shift it to the location, because then you already missed the hadlaka in the proper place. That's what it sounds like. We'll see. It's a little bit unclear if that's the whole story, but that's what it sounds like. If you're going to say hadlaka osa mitzvah, so then the assumption would be that you'd have to light it in the place where it is going to count. So asks the Gemara, if you don't say that, if you say Hanacha osa mitzvah, so why should it be a problem for me to light inside and bring it outside? So says the Gemara, because we're worried about Haro, we're worried about someone who's going to see you doing this. Says Haro Omer Litzorchad, because it'll look like you're just lighting for your own purposes and you're carrying it around with you. So we're worried about that. So for either side, whether you say Hadlaka or Hanacha, there's what to be concerned about, that we shouldn't let you light inside during that setting, and then bring it outside to what was then the proper place. Further, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that Hadlaka osa mitzvah, and therefore it connects to that the other point that the Gemara also debates. Says the Shulchan Aruch, as a consequence of Hadlaka osa mitzvah, so therefore kavsa ein zakukla. It's a machlokas in the Gemara whether we say kavsa zakukla or ein zakukla, which means, what happens if the menorah that you light gets extinguished before it's finished its appropriate length of time? So are you obligated to relight it? Zakukla, do you have a responsibility towards the menorah to relight it? So we paskin lo zakukla. You're not obligated, zakukla, you're not obligated to relight it. You're okay as long as you lit it and it went out, you're all right. And the Shulchan Aruch connects that to this idea that Hadlaka owes the mitzvah, since the mitzvah was done at the time of the Hadlaka. So if you got that far, so then at least b'di'eved, you're yotzei. And we'll talk about what exactly it means to say b'di'eved, you're yotzei. But under those circumstances, you lit and went out, you're okay. And the Shulchan Aruch says that's also true even if this is Friday afternoon, which the Taz argues. He argues on that part, because Friday afternoon, you're lighting completely before the time. So it's one thing to say if you lit after dark and then it went out a few seconds later, okay, so at least you got that hadlaka taking place within the Zman. Here, if you're going to light before it's even the appropriate time, as we do by necessity on Friday afternoon, we'll talk about that more in a few minutes. So the Taz disputed that, but that was the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, that even under a circumstance of Erev Shabbos, Kavsa Ein Zakukla, and connects it to this idea of Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah. There are other issues that are also related to that question of Kavsa Zakukla, Kavsa Ein Zakukla. Some of the Achronim assumed that it was connected to a question which is a little bit different, and will sound similar, but it's a little bit different. We'll discuss why it's different in a few minutes. the question of whether the mitzvah is to light the menorah or is the mitzvah to have candles burning. So if the idea is to light the menorah, okay, so then you accomplish that in that first second. But if it's to have candles burning, then that would require more of a continuous presence. And the base of Ephraim and his chuvas, he was one of those who maintained like that. And he thought that it was totally on the question of what is the proper nusach habracha. So we're not necessarily aware in practice that it's such a question, but it is a question. Our practice is to say lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. But there was another girsa, some of the Rishonim, the Trimur Sardeshan, I think, quotes from the, some of the Rishonim quote from the Yerushalmi, a different girsa, that the bracha should be al mitzvahs hadlakas ner Chanukah. So he suggests that this reflects the two different possibilities. Is the mitzvah lahadlik, or is the mitzvah to have Neresh Chanukah burning? That's perhaps reflective of this question. So we find that this gets a little complicated if you try to compare it to the menorah. The menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. And that menorah as opposed to Ner Chanukah, or as opposed to the Chanukiah. But the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, so one would assume that they should be comparable. That's actually what Rashi says. Rashi in the Gemara in Shabbos, it says, Hadlaka osa mitzvah. So Rashi says, Dumya to the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. That he's working backwards, assuming that was the story there. So therefore, it's true for the Neres Chanukah as well. So then it gets a little complicated, because the Rambam maintains that since hadlaka of that menorah is kishera bizar, you don't have to be a kohen to light that menorah, but on the other hand you have a technical issue because it has to be lit in the heichal, so a zar could light it outside and then have it brought into the heichal. So that seems to be a problem, because if we follow the way our Gemara seems to have set it up, if you say hadlaka osa mitzvah, that shouldn't work. You shouldn't be able to light it in the wrong place and then move it to the right place. And we seem to be assuming that for the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, hadlaka osa mitzvah. Why are we assuming that? Okay, because Rashi said it, and there are others who think it's compelling. The Minchas Chinuch, for example, who also asked this question, so he notes that hadlaka hamenorah of the Beis HaMikdash is Dolcha Shabbos. So if that was not the mitzvah itself, we could have the menorah lit from before Shabbos and have it lit into Shabbos. So the fact that that menorah, as opposed to our Neres Chanukah menorah, is Dolcha Shabbos, so that seems to indicate that the hadlaka itself is the mitzvah, so it can't be done in advance. So then that's a little bit of a question. If hadlaka is indeed also mitzvah, which the truth is there is some debate about this, in the Sefer Kochvi Yitzchak, he brings a whole slew of achronim who understood differently about the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. But if we assume, like the Rashi sounds, like the Menachas Chinuch is inferring, that hadlaka osa mitzvah indeed by the Beis HaMikdash, so then that's a problem. So then why is it that there we are apparently okay with moving it after it's already lit? The Ravid disagrees with the Rambam, but not so significantly, because he thinks that the Rambam overstated it when the Rambam said it's okay for the Zohar to do it this way. So Ravid says, no, it's not true, it's just if you do it that way, it's kosher. So it's just a kind of a more b'dievid connotation in the way the Ravid takes issue with the Rambam, but they both acknowledge that that would work, at least after the fact, to light the menorah, menorah Beis HaMikdash outside, and then bring it inside. So there are a number of approaches to this issue in the Rambam. Rav Zsolti and many others take similar approaches to this. Rav Zsolti notes, first taking a detour through a different issue, that the Shulchan Aruch, as we saw before, paskins hadlaka osa mitzvah, and he said that's why kafsa ein zakuk la. You don't have to relight it if it goes out. But the Shulchan Aruch also says that you can't light inside and then bring it outside. So far, so good. Why? Because Haroa Omer Letzorcho Adlaka, because someone who sees him will think he's doing it for his own purpose. So if you remember the Gemara we started with, that doesn't seem to fit, because the Gemara says if you say Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah, so then it should be enough. That's already a reason not to let you move it from one place to the next. And the Gemara only threw out that suggestion of Haroa according to the opinion that Hanacha Osa Mitzvah. So why does the Shulchan Aruch who says Hadlaka Osimit, so that should be enough reason not to let you move it. Why does he blame it on the Roa? So that's a little bit of an issue. So there are a number of suggestions. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in his Tshuva has quotes from earlier Achronim of Chacham Sofer and others, an interesting Yisod, which is just applicable in other places also. And he says that really, whenever you have a Gemara that says like this format, according to this way, we don't need an explanation because of some factor. In this case, Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah. But according to the other way, we'll need an explanation. So what's the explanation that'll cover that base too? Right, that's the structure of the Gemara we started with. So when you have a structure like that, and then they give you an answer for the second possibility, it says that means that really the first possibility wasn't perfect either. That the first possibility, okay, we have a little bit of an answer, but according to the second possibility, we have no explanation. So the explanation that covers the second one really works for both of them. That really now, once the Gemara says Haroa according to Hanachos and Mitzvah, Haroa is really the right reason, even according to Hadlakos and Mitzvah. So that, and other Achronim follow a similar path, that seems to suggest that really Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah is not enough of a reason not to move from one place to the next. That's really, Haro is really the reason not to move from one place to the next. And Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah is not enough of a reason. So why is it not? Why is Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah not really keep us from moving from one place to the next? So it could be that this is related to a classic Lumdish issue that gets schlepped into a lot of discussions, and mostly tonight it's going to come up in a couple of contexts as well. The Gemara Maseches Bava Kamma in the second parak, which has a debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to the nature of fire. We say that there's a chiyuv nezikin for somebody who starts a fire. Chmona Lutzlan is a Nyana Dioma, but you know, if somebody starts a fire, so there's a liability that comes along with that. So the question in the Gemara is between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to what is the nature of that liability. Do we say, like Reish Lakish, Eishav Mishum Mamono, that basically it's like your property? So it's like your ox, let's say, which is your property. So if you let your ox run free, so this is addressing essentially the fact that fire does damage, can do damage on a time delay. Again, as we Nebuch saw from the Yom, it can take a long time. You can set a fire and it can last for a couple of days. So the fire can do damage separate from the time when the person who set it actually set it. So how do we view his connection to that action? So we could view it as like his property. It's as if he owns this fire by having set it. So it's like his ox. If I let my ox run free, I open up the gate and I let my ox run around, and then 2 hours later he knocks down a china shop. So my liability was really when I opened the gate. It happened to be that I set, I allowed something to then happen, my liability is really when he does the damage. Basically, he does the damage on my cheshbon, that it's he's my property. While the other possibilities, we say eishav mishum chetziv, that it's compared to an arrow. That an arrow also can take a few seconds to hit its destination. Nowadays, with modern weaponry, we could use an example which would take a little bit longer. But even an arrow took a few seconds time delay from when you launch it to when it hits. But we understand that the arrow is essentially an action this guy is doing. It takes him a few seconds for it to realize, but it's essentially it's considered to be your action. It's not like your property that has its mind of its own and got loose and you're liable for it. This is something you're doing, even though it takes a few seconds from when you do it to when it hits its mark. So if you assume Eishav Mishum Chetziv, so then you can make a case that every second the fire is burning, it's like you're doing it. So it's like there's a new hadlaka going on as long as the fire is on. So even if we assume hadlaka osa mitzvah, it's not necessarily really a problem for us to move it from one place to the next, because once we bring it to the next place and it's still burning, that's called a new active hadlaka, because as long as it's going on, it's already another active hadlaka. So then we're really just worried about haroah. So Haroah is a problem for Neres Chanukah, but it's not really a problem for the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. The menorah of the Beis HaMikdash had a very distinct look, and no one who sees you lighting that menorah is going to think, oh, that must be your personal flashlight. It's going to be clear what's going on. So that doesn't have that kind of concern. And also the Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash, things like that, you don't have to necessarily assume that that was a concern in the Beis HaMikdash. I think it's only a concern that's relevant to the Neres Chanukah. But the question whether that could be, but the question whether that really works for the Rambam, because the Rambam seems to not necessarily take things that far, because he does say that a Cheresh Shot to the Katan, who lights, somebody is personally not obligated at all in lighting, that that's a problem. He's not, apparently he's assuming that the person when he lights has to be chayiv, and it's not enough that when he moves it to the right place, it's considered to be lighting itself, so to speak. So to that, a number of achronim wanted to suggest that maybe there is a difference between the Ner of Chanukah and the Ner of the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, that the Ner of Chanukah really, since we say Kafsa Zakukwa, Kafsa Ein Zakukwa, excuse me, you don't have to relight it, so then that essentially means that really the mitzvah happens at the time of lighting. That's the whole story, really. And the Beis HaMikdash, where the candle was burning all night, maybe all night and all day, so it's the story in itself, so there the mitzvah is to have it burning, and it's just that the lighting is considered a mitzvah in the sense of a hechsher mitzvah. So hadlakos, a mitzvah, would mean something different in the Beis HaMikdash than it does in the case of the menorah. And the Chelkas Yosef, of Yosef Roth, who has as far along those lines, he also then suggests a different approach. He says that maybe in the Beis HaMikdash there's two separate obligations. There's an obligation to light the menorah, and there's an obligation for it to be in the right place. And those are two separate concepts. So the fact that it's supposed to be in the Heichal, that doesn't affect the lighting. The lighting could be outside, and then the fact that it should be in the Heichal is considered a separate concept. And he says that could be pshat also in Al Hanisim. Everyone asks why it is in Al Hanisim, is a popular question. Why we say that Liku Neiros B'Chatzros Kochecha, that the Neiros were not lit in the Chatzir, lit in the Heichal. So we wanted to suggest that in theory they should be in the Heichal, but if they can't be in the Heichal, if they're forced to be outside, so then that's also good, that there's two separate concepts when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash. So that might be another reason to treat it differently. Okay. Another issue that comes up in the context of this whole story of Hadlaka and that focus, so since we assume that there is this emphasis on the moment of lighting, so the Rush writes, so therefore we're obligated, and this is clearly a key part of Kafsa Zakukla, that since we know there is an Indian of it being able to last some period of time, so how does that come into play then if it can go out and you're not obligated to relight it? So we understand that it means that it had to at least have the potential to last that long. So you can't use a tiny little candle or a minuscule amount of oil where it's for sure going to go out right away. You have to have enough oil there to last. And then if despite the fact that you had enough oil, it still went out, so then you're off the hook. But if you didn't have enough oil to begin with, so then that's not going to work. So the Rush says, in his commentary to Masechta Shabbos, he makes that point. So the hadlaka osa mitzvah means that the hadlaka has to be in a context where it could potentially last, because there is sufficient fuel, oil or a candle or whatever it is. And if you don't even have even that, so then that's not called a hadlaka that's going to qualify. And the Rush adds that if you start off with not enough, and then while it's still burning, so then you add more oil, so that now it'll last, that's also not good enough. Because then the hadlaka was not done in a context where it could have lasted. Even though you changed things later and you made it so it's going to last, the hadlaka is essentially not qualified. And the Shilta Gibarim adds that he thinks that this is true even if, in a different situation, if you light it in a place where the wind is too powerful, so then, and it's going to go out right away because of the wind, so then that's also no good, that even if you have enough oil there to last, and even though we paskin kavsa ein zakukla, it has to have potential, and that potential means also it can't have a situation like the wind that's going to immediately blow it out. Rabbi Yaakov Emden has, Shlomo Kluger has a tshuva where he distinguishes between the situation of the wind, which is external, and not having enough oil, which is inherent. But it seems to be other Rishonim already seem to have closed off that possibility, so it's a little surprising. as the Rav Asher Weiss notes. We'll talk about him in a minute. So this is how it's generally assumed, like the Rush, that it has to have at least potential to last for the proper amount of time. So based on that, Shlomo Fischer quotes, I think from Shulei Diskin. It wasn't clear. I think that's who he was quoting. He says, they maybe have a technical issue. He says, let's say you have a windy place and you're lighting outside. So no problem. You're going to put it in a glass case, let's say, so that it'll be outside and it'll be protected from the wind. But he said, yeah, but you do have a problem. Because, sorry?
No.
He says, because even if it's covered, so you have to, let's say, open it up for a second to get your match in there. So then the hadlaka is going to take place in the context of the wind. So since hadlaka osa mitzvah, and you're lighting it in a place where it can't last, even though you'll make it so it could last by immediately closing the door and having it protected, he thought that should be a problem. So Rav Shlomo Fischer quotes this, he disagrees, because this suggestion that even if you fix it right away, he says that... He says two things. He says, first of all, lighting it like this has got to be good, because that's kedarach hamadlikin, that's a normal way to do it, so he doesn't think that's a problem. And he says even further, he thinks that even if you lit it in a way where it was totally exposed, and then you realize, wait a minute, it's exposed, that's no good, and then you put the glass on afterwards, he says that should still be good. Even though we saw before that the Rush said that if you started off with not enough oil and then you add oil, that's not going to help. So how come here it helps to add the covering in the middle? So by doing this, he's addressing both the Rush and the Shulta Gibor. And Shulta Gibor is talking about a case where it goes out because it's going to be too windy. So you'll stop it from going out by covering it beforehand. But why doesn't that still have the Rush's problem? That the Rush said if you add oil after you lit it, it's no good. So he explains that that's really an issue that's inherent to the oil. And he has a whole maracha, before he gets to this, he has a whole essay where he talks about the menorah, the Beis HaMikdash, and the menorah of Hanukkah, where he suggests that all the oil that's in the, he proves this from various points, because all the oil that's in the flame, so even though not all of it is burning from the moment you light it, all the time that it's burning, all that oil that's there that's connected is if it's burning. So even though it's not practically burning, in theory you could blow out the wick and salvage all that oil, still, it's considered burning as long as it's connected to that whole process. And it's nafkamina for Ochel Shabbos, there's some serious nafkaminas. So, therefore, he says, that's where the Rush's concern comes in. That if when you light the menorah, there's enough oil there to last, so it's as if all the oil is burning. So if that goes out, okay, so then Kav Sein Zokikla. So then it's as if you burnt all that oil, and if it doesn't actually get to play out, then you're not obligated to relight it. But if there wasn't enough oil there to begin with, so then that's a problem you can't fix by adding more oil later.
But there'd have to be practically no oil.
Practically no oil for which case?
To be over the Rush apparently.
Practically not enough oil.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if you have no, that the Rush, I think that's what the Rush says. If you don't have enough oil, so then that's no good even for Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah, because when you're lighting it in a situation where it can't last. And even if you make it last, by correcting the situation afterwards, you miss the hadlaka osa mitzvah because it doesn't have enough to last. So that's how he distinguishes between the oil issue and the other external issues. Even if you accept the shulta gibarim and others and say that wind is an issue, but wind is an issue when it actually does knock it out, while the potential to knock it out, if you correct that right away, so then and you make sure it doesn't happen, so then you don't have the Rush's problem for that. So even though the Shulta Gibarim was comparing wind and not enough oil, there are significant differences between the way they are applied, which could then extend to another issue. So Rav Asher Weiss, in the journal that his Beis Din publishes called Darchei Hora, so he talks about a shaila that comes up a lot and people have some interesting attitudes towards. What if somebody wants to go to Eretz Yisrael or somewhere comparably far on Hanukkah, and in doing that he has to travel all night, he has to fly in a plane all night, so he's going to be away for the entire night of a night of Hanukkah. So what should he do? So The Shoel asks, he says, here are two possibilities. He wanted to know which one was right. And the two possibilities were that either he should light on the plane and then immediately put it out, or, no, he shouldn't immediately put it out because that would be a problem, which we'll discuss in a second what that problem is. So he should light, and then when the stewardess comes with the marshal trying to shoot him, he should tell them that oh, they could put it out if they want. So they'll put it out, but he won't put it out. Shockingly, Rav Asher Weiss, initially in the very beginning, he says, before you ask which one of those possibilities is right, you should be aware that neither of them is right, and he explains why. So he has a couple of points there to explain why neither is right, and agav that, it gets into these points, so we'll just mention the whole discussion briefly. Says, first of all, and this is what I thought before I read the piece, so it's Baruch Shekivanti, that a person is essentially putter when he is flying in such a situation, because the chiyuv of Neres Chanukah, and this is the whole chakir in general, but the chiyuv of Neres Chanukah is what's known as Chovas Abayis, even though that's a little bit of a debate, the Pnei Yeshua, the whole discussion about it is what to say. Maybe if it was a third Wednesday Neres Chanukah, we would talk about it more, but it does seem that way, that all the emphasis is on a bai, especially in Neri Shabbos. So there's a lot of rayas that, at least on a core level, the mitzvah is a household mitzvah specifically. So if somebody doesn't have a house, so at that night, maybe he doesn't have a house, so we could argue that he's exempt for that reason. Now, as he notes, there is a literature that says that somebody who's on a train is obligated to light. There's a Maharsham and an Aruch HaShulchan, Tzitz Eliezer has a whole discussion. So maybe that's true, maybe it's not true. Because even if that's true, there's room to distinguish between a train and an airplane. So a train, especially a more old-fashioned kind of train ride, which maybe let's say the Maharsham might be talking about, it's not exactly what the Manhattan subway, so you rent a place in it, so essentially when you buy your tickets, you have like a room, a moving room. When you're on a plane, where really you have nowhere to walk around and you have no space, it's really just that they're moving you from one place to the next, and they're giving you a seat so you don't have to stand up the whole time. It's hard to really call that seat your bias, so there's a strong room to distinguish between the airplane and the train, even if you assume, like those poskim, that the train would have an obligation to light.
Maybe
so,
first class is different.
My first class is more of a bias, right? It's an interesting problem that people really love that. So, so that, first of all, he says that that's essentially a patur, that you have no bias. Then he goes on to say that neither of these really strange plans, where you light it and put it out, or you have them put it out, says essentially both of those run afoul of the yisod that we have from the Rishonim, from the Rosh and the Shulte Gibarim, that this is no better than a windy place. If you know it's not going to be able to last, that it's immediately going to have to be extinguished, whether it's you or the stewardess, he says, makes no difference. He says, the fact is, you know that it's not going to be able to be kept burning for more than half a second before the marshal shoots you, and you fall over onto the flame and extinguish it. So then that's not going to work, and that's a bracha levatal if you'd make such a bracha. Says that doesn't have any potential to be counted because of what we're essentially talking about. It mentions then parenthetically that I guess the Shoel had also suggested that maybe you should go into the bathroom and light there. Once again, shockingly, he's extremely opposed to that. He doesn't even mention the whole fire alarm, don't disable the smoke alarm thing, and you know, you go to jail for 100 years. So that doesn't even mention that. He says that, first of all, very hard to call that Pursume Nisa. And it's a Bizoy Mitzvah, and that's just a horrible idea. But he says, most importantly, he says, you're not allowed to break the rules of the airline, so it's not even a havamina. And especially because these rules, in addition to all other issues where that would compel you to obey, but the rules are because of sakana. And nobody has the right to ever say, well, anything because of sakana, I can do it, it won't be a sakana. Because the whole rules of sakana are that anything that if everybody would do it, it would be a sakana. So then even one person can't do it. And that's especially true when it comes to Neres Chanukah, which is all about Prisumenisa. It's all about you want everyone to see what you're doing and do it. So especially in that context, it doesn't make sense for you to say that I can do it and it'll be okay, and it's not, I don't have to worry about these kind of issues.
So if you were to light, be lighting NYU, when you know the security guard blows all the candles out at midnight, because that's
But midnight is okay.
But the, meaning, so if you're going to, let's say, light, you just get back and you light at 11:45, whatever. So that would be...
So that's a little bit pushing it, but although if you stayed with it, the security guard probably let you... No?
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, the 11:45 is, you know, you get a little close, but you know, light enough time that it lasts. You know, the fact that it eventually puts it out is okay. It just has to last enough time. The cases we're talking about is not going to last even a minute. That's a different kind of problem. So that's another example of this whole issue of how the hadlaka is viewed. Just to maybe say another few quick points about that. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Chanukah that you're not yotze if you light before the Zman. You have to light after Shkiyas HaChama, and you're not yotze if you light earlier. So the Ran disagrees, because the Ran in his commentary to Shabbos, he says he can bring a proof that that's not true. Because what about on Friday afternoon? Friday afternoon you have to light before the Zman, and apparently that works. Apparently you're yotze in that case. So that should be a raya that it works. In general, he gets into a brief discussion of, is it possible to say different definitions of Shkia for the purposes of Shabbos and the purposes of Neres Chanukah. It's difficult to sustain, particularly within the Rambam, so it's probably not going to work. So it seems that, by definition, if it's acceptable for the Zman, it's already Asur Mitzum Shabbos, so you can't reconcile those two. So, Rav Nosson Gishtetner, Zechon Levracha, still in Shloshim for him, so he mentions in his Sefer on Chanukah, Nosson Priyo on Chanukah, that he thinks that, first of all, how do you explain the Ran's position that you can light beforehand? So this goes back to our old standby of Eishu Mishmachetzel, we mentioned a few minutes ago, gets slept into all these discussions. One of the discussions that it gets brought into, by the way, there's a famous Nimuki Yosef that raises the question, how is it that we're able to light Shabbos candles? Because if you light Shabbos candles, it should be considered as if Friday night when your candles are lit, that it's as if you're lighting them now. It's just like your arrows. So Nimuki Yosef says, no, in terms of Malacha, that's not true, because Malacha, the physical action that you did, that was done before Shabbos. It's just, let's say, in terms of Nezikin. So the liability would be as if you're doing it then. But in terms of Chil Shabbos, that you're not doing Malacha on Shabbos, so the action that you did was done before Shabbos. But one could say a little bit differently. One could say that even if it is considered like you're doing something now on Shabbos, still that's essentially passive. And when it comes to Shabbos, so the whole definition, as Rav Shtetner points out, he emphasized in other contexts, that doing Malacha on Shabbos means you have to actively be doing something. And that's why, like, for example, Amir al-Akum and all that stuff is generally considered to be an Issur Rabbanan, because even if you were to say there's actual shlichus, so a malacha through shlichus, as Chassam Sofer explained, is not considered to be a chil Shabbos, because if you're at rest, even if a malacha is happening under your command and is somehow connected to you, those are Rabbanan kinds of issues, because that's not considered to be a chil Shabbos. So too, one could argue that Eishu Mishmachetzev means on some level that the candles are being lit on Shabbos, just it's not a malacha problem. So that could be in general why the Ran can maintain that even if you light beforehand, so this Eishu Mishmachetzev once again makes it as if the lighting is happening during the proper Zman. So what about the Rambam? So then he says an interesting vort, that he notes that the Gemara says Masechus Ksubis in reference to Kimle B'Rabmine, that let's say I'm a Chal Shabbos or I kill somebody through shooting an arrow at them. So while I'm doing that, I also say it could be a Chal Shabbos by shooting an arrow Dalet Amos B'Shos HaRabim. So while it's in flight, so I also tear somebody's clothes. So am I obligated to pay for the nezikin to pay for their clothes? Or do we say kim lev d'rab mineg and chal shabbos at the same time, so the chi of misa outweighs it? So it sounds like you should say that no, you're obligated to pay because you ripped the clothes before you finished the malacha. The malacha is based on the putting it down, it happens afterwards, on the hanacha that happens afterwards. So the Gemara has a couple of answers. One answer is One answer is a kiru l'tzarech hanacha. It's all one big process. When you picked it up, it's all still at the beginning of the malacha. But another answer the Gemara gives is that since you can't take it back, since once the arrow is in motion, you can't bring it back and stop it, so then it all goes back to that initial moment. So it's as if I was Mechal Shabbos first, and then, or as I started Mechal Shabbos first, and then did the Nezikin in the middle of that, even though the actual Chil Shabbos only happened when the arrow lands. So you know it's there. So what's the key of that explanation? That you can't take it back. So he wants to suggest, Olam D'Shabshat, that maybe during the week, if you light before dark, so then that's not considered to go back to that time of when it continues into the nighttime. So that's not continued to all go back to the first moment, because you could always take it back. You could change it in any moment. So therefore, that's not considered to be, or it's not considered to be credited to you at that time. But on Friday afternoon, so since there's an issue of Shabbos, you can't put it out. So then, the arrow svara applies. Maybe that's, even though it's a different type of, you can't take it back. You can't take it back, not physically, but because of malacha. That's a cute little idea. Parenthetically, I want to mention quickly a few connections to Ner Shabbos. So there is a whole discussion, how does Ner Shabbos relate to this? Do we say Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah or Hanacha Osa Mitzvah? So when the Shulchan Aruch says Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah, so the Taz says, like Rashi had said in the Gemara, that Dumya to the menorah. And he says, therefore, that's not true when it comes to Ner Shabbos. That in other words, it's only by Hanukkah because it has a menorah connection that we'd say Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah, but we shouldn't assume that's true for Ner Shabbos. And the Prima Gadim disagrees. Prima Gadim says no, Ner Shabbos also Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah. So that's the whole discussion. There are some who suggest, first of all, it's machlokas what the proper bracha should be for Ner Shabbos also. So that's also perhaps related to this whole question. But some suggest that it's all about the issue of what are Ner Shabbos for. Say, Kavod Shabbos or Onik Shabbos. There is a whole discussion. It goes back to the Vilna Gaon, who made famous this distinction, which not everyone agrees with, but many assume like the Vilna Gaon, that what you do before Shabbos for Shabbos is called Kavod Shabbos, and what you do on Shabbos is called Onik Shabbos. So what are the purpose of Ner Shabbos? Is it that you should light it before Shabbos for your preparations, or as part of the preparations you do for Shabbos, it's an aspect of Kavod Shabbos? Or is it that you should have the candles lit on Shabbos because of Onik? So that discussion fits into the whole Hadlaka Hanacha issue as it would be transferred from Hanukkah to Shabbos. There is an interesting point about their relationship, and that the Mishnah says that if a person can't afford Ner Shabbos and Ner Chanukah, so Ner Shabbos takes precedence over Ner Chanukah. So we assume that's how most of Rishonim assume that's what we're talking about. The Gemara actually says Ner Beso. Most Rishonim assume it means the household candle. The household candle means the Shabbos candle. So why should Shabbos candles take priority over Chanukah candles? Pirshimanisa is such a priority, such a big deal, and yet apparently Ner Shabbos is more important than Ner Chanukah. So the Gemara says, Mishum Shalom Beiso. The issue is Shalom Bayis. What exactly does that mean? What's the reference there? So what does Ner Shabbos have to do with Shalom Bayis? So Rashi, in one place, Rashi sounds like it's actually a reference. It's an unusual way to say it, but it's actually a reference to Onik. That the Onik Shabbos is not going to be possible if you can't see. So therefore, it's there to facilitate your Onik Shabbos. As the Gemara says in Yuma, that you don't have any pleasure from food that you can't properly see. That's why we need Ner Shabbos in general. So maybe that's what Shalom means. Elsewhere, Rashi and other Rishonim also suggest that it means more practical Shalom in the household. Because if people are tripping over things, cursing each other out because they're so frustrated, so then there's going to be more fighting. Based on that, one could say, well, then why is it just about Shabbos? Maybe it's during the week, too, we should have such a priority. So the interesting thing is that some of the Rishonim Taka see that way. If you assume the Gemara says Ner Beso, Doesn't necessarily mean near Shabbos. Maybe we're just assuming that. Maybe it means any night of the week if you can't see and you're going to be tripping over each other and fighting. So better you should have light in your household than you should have Neres Chanukah, which is quite a striking statement. The Meiri understands that it's specific to Neres Shabbos. He says the Shalom Bayis issue is that since the candles are traditionally, Shabbos candles are traditionally the woman's domain, so if you're going to say, well, we don't have enough, so I'm going to take away that mitzvah from you and give it to the man, which generally lights the Hanukkah candles, so that'll be grounds for fighting. So we don't want the wife to feel like her mitzvah is being taken away and given to the husband, so therefore that's a reason to prioritize Neres Shabbos. But you could ask the following question, even though you'll tell me in a second why you wouldn't ask the question, but you could say, well, why don't I just economize and combine everything? Why don't I just take one candle and have that count both as a Shabbos candle and a Chanukah candle? Because at least the Iker Mitzvah, one candle, that should be enough. So why won't I think to ask that question? Because you'll say, you can't get Hana. You'll say that essentially Shabbos candles and Chanukah candles are opposites. Right? Shabbos candles are there for you to use, and Chanukah candles you're not supposed to use. So that should take that question off the table, literally. Right, that should right away make that not work. So there's a couple of reasons why you could still raise the question. One reason is because the opinion in the Gemara that says Ner Shabbos Ner Beis Tol Adif is Rava, and Rava also is of the opinion that you can get Hanukkah from Ner Chanukah. So at least according to him, it's a good question. Why doesn't he just use both? So as Rav Nachman Gestetner again points out, maybe it's not such a good question because in his time the Gemara is they lit outside, so the candle outside is not going to help you for the candle inside. So, okay, so for that we don't have to necessarily ask why he didn't say that. But what about for us? So, is there what to ask from that question? So maybe the Ravid actually quotes somebody who says that when we say you can't get hana from Neres Chanukah, so that means only a personal hana, but hana shal mitzvah you can. So for your Shabbos meal, hana shal mitzvah, you would be able to get hana from the candle. However, says the Ravid, that opinion must be wrong, because we see that from this din. Since the Gemara assumes you have to choose between Neres Shabbos and Neres Chanukah, that shows you that you can't use Neres Chanukah for your personal purposes, even if it's a purpose of the mitzvah. So he uses that point to refute the view that a Tashmish Shel Mitzvah would be okay. So, but nonetheless, one could argue that even if that's the case, so we should still say, okay, but I'm still better off counting it for Neres Chanukah and using it, because my choices are not to have any Neres Chanukah at all, or having a Neres Chanukah which I'm using for my personal purposes, or purposes of mitzvah. So presumably that's better than having no Neres Chanukah at all. That's the choice. So it does make sense to say that you should be able to do that. And Taka the Magen Avraham says that. The Magen Avraham essentially says that if you don't have enough money for both, so then you should use your Neres Chanukah as your Shabbos candles, and even says, like we alluded to before, even during the week also, if you don't have lighting in your house and it's going to be a problem, so then you prioritize lighting in your house and you have that count as your Neres Chanukah as well. So some point out there seems to be a stira, because the Magen Avraham also says earlier, when trying to figure out what you can and can't do with Neres Chanukah, so he says you can't even use it for eating by, because we see from this whole prioritization question that the Gemara is assuming that you can't just combine them. So on the one hand, he proves from the Gemara that you can't combine them and therefore you can't in general use it for your meal. And then practically he says if you have to choose, you should combine them. So it seems like a contradiction, as late as Farim point out. So Gestetner suggests that no, the difference is, once again, before the change and after the change of bringing the menorah inside the house. That Bizmana Gemara, when the menorah was outside the house. So to use it for your meal, that would mean that you have to pick it up and bring it into your house for your own purposes. So that's really wrong. That's so clearly using it for your purposes. But nowadays, that the menorah is in your house anyway, so then you could take advantage of the fact that it's there and eat your meal by its light. So then it's not obvious that you're putting it there for your purpose, so that's enough reason to distinguish. So the Magen Avraham is saying that bismanazah, that you have a menorah inside the house, so then b'diavet, or b'shas hadchak, essentially, you can use that for your meal also, even though if you didn't have to, you wouldn't, because in lana rishus, but if it's a choice between that and no Hanukkah candles, so you'll do that. But b'zman ha-gemara, they wouldn't have done that, because then to actually take it from the outside and bring it inside, that would be a overt, visible, using it for your own purposes, that we wouldn't justify. Okay, so those are a few topics related to this question of halakha. Just to quickly review what we spoke about the Gemara is raising this question of halakha or hanacha. The Gemara seems to say that if you say halakha, you can't move from place to place because of a fundamental issue in halakha. If you say hanacha, moving from place to place is a problem of someone who's watching haro, will say you did it for your own purposes. The Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch uses halakha osa mitzvah to explain why kafsa ain't zakukla, why you don't have to relight it if it goes out. He says it applies even to Friday afternoon. The Taz disagrees about Friday afternoon, but otherwise agrees. We then discussed how some say a little bit differently the Kav Sein Zokuk law is about the question of whether it's mitzvah to light or to have candles lit. The Beis Ephraim suggests that that was totally on the issue of what bracha we should make, the bracha that we have of Hadlak Ner, or the Yerushalmi's bracha of Hadlakas Ner Hanukkah. And then we talked about how does this match up with the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, that there it would seem to say hadlakos and mitzvah by the fact that Rashi says that about the Hanukkah menorah, and as the Menachas Chinuch points out, that that's why it's Docha Shabbos, because it must be that the lighting itself is the mitzvah. But the question is, the Rambam says that if a Zar lights it outside, that's fine, and the Rebbe says at least after the fact it's okay. So how does that match? So we mentioned one approach, that first of all, when the Torah says, the Shulchan Aruch says, you can't move from place to place, but not because of Hadlaka Osu Mitzvah, because of Haroah. So we mentioned Rosh Pesach Frank, who explains the way when a Gemara is structured that way, the second answer really is better than the first, and that really Hadlaka is not a reason to move it, not move it from one place to the next. So now Chorotim explained, because Veishim Mishim Chetzev, that essentially whenever you move it to a new place, it's as if you are relighting it at that time. So then really the only issue is Haroah, and that's not an issue by the Beis HaMikdash, because that's not a concern, it's a distinctive menorah. And the mention of the Chalkis Yosef suggests also that maybe then Beis HaMikdash is two separate ideas, that there is the idea of lighting it and having it in the right place, and that maybe Tak in the time of the original Hanukkah, it was not in the right place, and that's why the Al-Nisim says, Liku Nerush Bechatris Kachecha. And they also then suggested, and the Rav Jolti suggested, a difference between the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash and the menorah of Hanukkah, even if they had luck in both cases. But in the case of Hanukkah, the Hadlaka is really the whole story, and in the case of the Beis HaMikdash, really having it lit is really a big part of the mitzvah. Not just the Hadlaka is a mitzvah in the sense of a Hechsher mitzvah, so it doesn't play out exactly the same way as the menorah of the Hanukkah. And then we talked about the Rush saying that you can't light it in a place where it's going to... We don't have enough oil. And this was the Gevurim saying that you can't light it in a place where it's going to go out. And Shulei Diskin saying, so therefore when you light it in a glass box outside, it's a problem even when you're lighting it, even if you cover up right away because of that. And we mentioned from official explanation why that's not true, why it's really only a concern if you don't have enough oil, because all the oil that's there is considered to be part of the Hadlaka. But if you don't have enough, that's a problem. And in terms of the wind, it's only a practical issue. If you stop the wind from coming, even after you've lit it, then that's going to take care of that. And then mentioned that the question comes up about flying on an airplane. How do you handle that? And we mentioned Rosh Weiss's tshuva about how you should not either light yourself or have... and put out yourself or have the stewardess put it out for you. A couple of reasons why that is. You don't have a bias, so you're potter, and it's different from a trainer. Maybe you have more of a bias. Also, if you do such a thing, you're not going to be credited anyway, because that's like putting it in the wind, and that's a bracha levatala, and also the major sakana issues which he goes into. And then we talked about the question of lighting before the zman. The Rambam says no good. And the Ran says it is good to see from Shabbos, and we point to how you could possibly explain both those positions, also using the whole arrow theory. And then we talked about how we can compare Neros Shabbos and Neros Chanukah, and that the Taz says Neros Shabbos is not Hadlaka Osimis, but the Megadim says it is, and that may be tied to the question of whether Shabbos is about, Neros Shabbos is about Oneg or about Kavod. And then we just talked about the question of the Mishnah saying that Neros Shabbos are more important, and the question you could ask, why can't you combine them? Well, even if we say that we hold you can't get Hana, but the opinion of the Gemara that says that Neros Shabbos wins does hold you can get Hana, and that's quite a question on him. So Shtetner mentioned the issue of Bezvana Gemara that were lighting outside, but the Lysa, also the Ravid argues on a Rishon who says that you could use it for Tashma Shal Mitzvah from the same proof. But the Magen Avraham says, Lamaisa, you might as well better do that, because otherwise the choice between that and having no Neros Chanukah. But he also says that this sugi is a raya, that you can't use it for Hana of eating. And Rabbi Shtetner suggested again, that's also a question of before it was outside and when it's inside, when it's outside. If you bring it in for your meal, that's really clearly doing it for your own purposes. While if you're lighting inside anyway, so then even though you're not really supposed to be having your dinner by the candles, if it's the only alternative, then that's better than nothing. Okay, you should enjoy Zos Chanukah. Next week, still normal school of mine, everything. Right? Everybody's around next week?
Is anybody here still in school?
Okay. Okay, so everybody who's here now.